Good evening, workshoppers. Welcome to tonight's episode. We are slightly delayed here. I know we're recording on a Thursday night as opposed to a Wednesday. Hopefully it won't affect those that are listening at home, listening on iTunes, Stitcher. I believe we're on SoundCloud now. The Google Podcast thing? I'm not sure where JR has us all plugged into. I know there's dozens of places that you can go through and find the podcast. Or you're watching the Twitch replay or us on YouTube. I keep saying us when it's just me. I'm never going to get used to that. I honestly am not. But we've had a little bit of an interesting week here in Diablo news. And that's why I wanted to go through and title this episode 167 Rumor Milling. Because there's been some little tiny developments. It's like we get these little tiny breadcrumbs of stuff that goes and helps push things forward, a little bit of extra news to talk about. Before I get too much into that, there are a couple of like little announcements. As I mentioned on the last week's episode, the Diablo Fans itself has been purchased by a company called Magic Find, which awesome little reference there. And Diablo Fans is like 100% fully back, and I am glad to announce that I did manage to go through and get my my position back on the staff again. So you actually can already find a couple of articles from me over on Diablo Fans, so be sure to go through and check that out. It's great to be, you know, paid again to be writing about Diablo news and things of that nature. It is I don't know. It's just still like one of those ones. It's just unreal to actually, you know, think it's not exactly like it's gonna be putting it's gonna be paying my bills or anything like that. It's definitely a tiny little compensation, but anything, it's still, you just like you're getting paid right about video games. So it could be better than that, right? It's absolutely amazing. But yeah, I'll actually be covering some of the stuff I talked about on Diablo Fans on the episode here. The other big thing that is going on today, and this was originally going to pass me by, I have to admit that I completely missed the fact that today, June 27th, is the birthday of Diablo II Lord of Destruction, so just the expansion. So D2 is legal now, turned 18 today, because it was originally launched on June 27th, 2001, and the world has never been the same. At least, especially if you're listening to this podcast, like, that was the thing that when people think back to Diablo 2, most think back to Lord of Destruction. You'll think back, oh man, I love those skill charms, my 40 damage, 15 attack speed gems, or jewels, sorry. Those were all add-ins from Lord of Destruction. Lord of Destruction completely changed the way D2 played. And when you think about a lot of the things that you enjoy, a lot of it might have come with Lord of Destruction. It's a very different game from going back and playing D2 Classic, which if you've never actually experienced, you can always go and load a non-expansion character with Diablo 2 and just give it a try. And it is a bit rough. It is definitely a bit rough. I've tried it a couple of times, and I have to say that while the beginning, it's not as bad. Once you get to like the end, and you know you can't do bail runs, you're pretty much just stuck with doing the Chaos Sanctuary runs. It gets a bit more worse for wear. You don't have as many of the items besides like just the jewels and charms. You don't have as many of the set pieces and such, that those are exclusive to Lord of Destruction. But it's just a different experience in like half the stash space. Let's not forget half the stash space. So you don't have as much things to go through and clog it up, but it's still a pain all the same. And while we're going through and mentioning Diablo 2, I didn't cover this on the last episode, but I did want to just take a quick second to go through and mention that Diablo 2 actually did have a ladder reset back on the 14th. So if you've been wanting to something to break up kind of like the mid-season doldrums, you're looking for something else to do while keeping it Diablo related, by all means go through and check out the D2 with the brand new ladder. You're only a couple weeks behind. The economy is still fresh. You still probably find tons of people that are going through and getting levels and boosts. And there's a pretty decent amount of people that are still playing Diablo 2, especially around these ladder resets. If you're in the US though, pretty much the majority of the community is just on US East. There are some people that still play US West, but I believe the way that the story goes is that both of the data centers, or both of those servers are hosted at the same data center, and they're both on the East Coast. So you more or less get the same ping no matter which one that you play, and the vast majority of people on the in NA play on US East. So it's if you want to go through and try it up, regardless of where you are in the country, probably just want to roll on US East if you want a better experience to play with people. Now actually going into like some of the deeper rumors and such, there have been a couple of little things that have happened over the past few weeks. And it's one of the ones that was the most interesting was there was an article from the French website Le Monde. And I originally pulled this information from Icy Veins. They're the ones that went through and hit it. That talked about Blizzard showcasing Diablo 4 to the staff over at Vercellos, which is the headquarters for Blizzard Europe. And what it went on to say is that the Blizzard employees had been shown basically an in-production version of Diablo 4 as well as a new Overwatch game. Neither of these two games will be released before 2020. This coincides with Blizzard's statements with their financial earnings report earlier this year where they said that they have no major releases for 2019. And it also talked a little bit about that there's still some question as to what Blizzard is going to be doing with a lot of their international staff. We know that they had let go, you know, hundreds of employees earlier this year in the U.S. operations, but there's also still cuts to be made overseas. And, you know, it is sad to go through and have to kind of like take that information hand in hand, where you have further confirmation that Diablo 4 is getting closer and closer to the point where they're going to announce it, versus the reminder that the community teams, the ones that are out there on the front lines, on the forums, the social media and such, are still kind of regarded as like not developers, that they're just there's support staff and that's about it. But you know, that's a discussion that we've had a whole bunch, though I'm sure that we'll probably have that discussion again at some point in the future as more and more video game companies across the industry have been going through and have been following suit. There have been major layoffs in regards to the community teams, social media teams. Microsoft just got rid of its own like internal publishing department. They did, you know, shows, podcasts, interviews, and such, and that's now kind of like getting wrapped up. It's strange seeing the video game industry continue to find what works, what doesn't. Where, you know, oh, so long ago as we were just talking about Diablo fans, like that was Diablo fans, DiabloII.net, like that. Those were like the big pillars of the Diablo community. That's where you went for all of your news and information. Now it's, you know, YouTube, it's Twitch streamers where you go through to get your updates and info. People aren't as interested in, you know, going through checking out those fan sites such as BlizzPro or Icy Veins or Diablo Fans. They're kind of a secondary source of information. It's more of a kind of like that instant gratification. And as like the video game companies kind of like picked up on that and started to mirror it with their own, who here remembers BlizzCast? A very short-lived podcast that Blizzard themselves had run, just because it had been a very popular thing back in the, you know, the early 2010s, 2010s, whatever you want to call this particular decade that we're living in. And they, you know, it had really great production value, had some nice developer interviews, but I'm sure it was probably a pain in the ass on the back end for them to go through and do. It might not have had as much traction as they wanted compared to other popular podcasts at the time, or, you know, YouTube channels. With nowadays trying to compete that with, you know, your modern streamers, it's more more noise out there in the pond that it might be better suited in their interest to just go through and be like, tap a big name YouTuber such as Leviathan or Bloodshed or Riker and be like, hey, we've got some information that we want to share with you to go through and put out on your website. That's just the way that things go. But the reason why, going back to the original point of the topic, the reason why I wanted to mention this article of them going and showing their staff Diablo 4 is so important is because that means that it's actually at a point where they're willing to show it, not just with the internal team over at Irvine, but they're sharing it with international teams as well, that, hey, this is something that we're working on, this is something that we're proud of, and it's getting to the point where it is able to be shown. It's not just, maybe a guy walking through mesh backgrounds or partially half-completed zones. It's actually something that's, worth showing, maybe with a decent, skill UI, animations and such, to give a real sense of what the game itself is going to be like. We didn't hear any of this last year, nor was any of this talked about in Jason Schreier's article from Kotaku back after BlizzCon, where they had plans to try and announce Diablo 4 at last year's BlizzCon, but it just didn't work out. And they had never gotten to the point where they really had shown it outside of Irvine, from what we can tell. There were no rumors, no leaks or anything of that nature that Diablo 4 was actively being showed to other departments at other locations outside of Blizzard HQ. But the fact that it now is at a point where they are willing to open up and start sharing it with the rest of the company is a pretty good indicator that we are going to get something, anything, at BlizzCon 2019. Whether it's more than just a little bit of a cinematic trailer and a gameplay teaser, because that is what the original Diablo 3 reveal back in 2008 was. They showed gameplay, but the game itself wasn't playable. You didn't have a chance to play it until, I believe it was the 2008 BlizzCon, a couple of months afterwards, that you actually were able to get your hands on the game for the first time and have the public at large try out a demo, which was the Halls of Agony, I believe. And also back then, they had the Talisman, where you still had charms in Diablo 3 at that point to go and equip. And we all know how that worked out for Diablo 3, as they had wide, grandiose ideas, but the actual implementation of some of those ideas ended up eventually having to go through and get them cut. What is a charm besides just extra stats? Can't we just bake that into the regular items themselves? Why do we have to have a whole other inventory system? It's just a redundant inventory system, which I can understand from the development side, but from the player side, the player aspect, that even though it's redundant and that you can achieve that same thing elsewhere, even through the Paragon system, having that extra little layer of customization doesn't really make the game that much more complicated, but makes the player themselves feel better. Think about going back to Diablo 2, if you go through and you found, if you're a melee character and you found a charm that gave you strength and, poison damage over time, you're like, damn, that's awesome. And then you found another one, you're like, yeah, kick ass. As opposed to, just finding a weapon that had a little bit more damage, is something that, effectively reaches the same goal, but the other one, just sits in your inventory, and every time that you look at it, you think, it's like, oh yeah, that thing is actually giving me buff damage, as opposed to, well, I can't wait to replace this weapon. You're never thinking, I can't wait to replace this charm. The charm is like an extra, it's the cherry on top, it's the whipped cream, it's the sprinkles. It's something that just adds a little highlight to your character that not everyone else might, everyone is going to have Trangle's gloves or this or that, but I've got this one little charm, or that there is a class skill charm out there that I really need to get, and so it gives you a little bit more of a drive. It gives you something else to find, another thing to upgrade. It's like, well, I've got my kind of like my in-game weapon. I found that 1 in 1 billion chance of getting a death's web. I'm never going to upgrade this baby. So, what else can I do? I can go and still try and grind out and find one more skill charm, or get that skill charm with, plus vit something along those lines, that you feel as if you're customizing your character. And it's something that I can definitely see the draw and the appeal for with Path of Exile in the skill tree, is just, it's, sure, there's still cookie cutter builds, it's all overly redundant and all gets you to the same place, but which one feels better, you know, to the player themselves? So I think that's something that maybe that we can definitely find a better middle ground. It's something that I've been like kind of like thinking in my head. Dread has those amazing development hell articles that he posts on diablo.blizzpro.com, and there's one that I've been thinking about in my mind, about just having to have the time to sit down and put it, you know, the pen to paper or the finger to keyboard. It doesn't sound quite as elegant, but just, you know, trying to make the case for skill trees, and that even though you can screw yourself up putting the skill points in the wrong place and all that, as long as you have some system where you can kind of like respec talent trees, I think overall are a better feel for the player than, you know, pick four passives and a couple active skills, you know, or like the World of Warcraft where you have the sliding tabs about, well, which talent do I want to pick? And then after level 90, I feel like I have no actual character progression anymore because I don't get any more talents unlocked. It's just the skill points, I think, are a way of rewarding play to the player. And I would definitely like to see come back. I didn't even have this on my actual like show notes. And now here I am going on a 10-minute tangent about skill trees and Diablo 2 and such. Just, you know, bringing up the topic of Diablo 2 refreshes these things in my head. But actually, moving on and progressing through the news instead of reminiscing on days past, there was a article yesterday that was about the Games Lab conference that was over in Barcelona, that there was they were honoring Mike Morhaime, the former CEO and president of Blizzard, with the Games Lab Honor Award, you know, for his outstanding service within the games industry and, you know, pushing, you know, and forming so many huge pillar titles of the industry as a whole. No one can argue things such as Diablo, StarCraft, Warcraft, and now Overwatch haven't fundamentally changed, you know, gaming as a whole. And to coincide, you know, with the award itself, VentureBeat, or specifically GamesBeat, put together a small roundtable discussion that was hosted by Dean Takahashi, and it had a bunch of industry pundits and such that got together and kind of have a roundtable Q&A with Mike Morhaime about, you know, his experiences in the industry, what he's going to be going through and doing next, as well as some of his thoughts of things that have happened at Blizzard. And there's a couple of interesting things that he touched on. One was something that we've heard before about kind of Blizzard has only a 50% release rate for their games, and that for basically every title that they push out, there's one that got scrapped. We know of some such as Titan, StarCraft Ghost, Warcraft Adventures. I believe there was one, there was some rumored, not a rumor, he gave a, I believe it was actually Mike Morhaime that had given a talk at a GDC many years ago that had a list of some of the other titles that Blizzard had dropped. One was like Terra Nova or something along those lines, like just names with no meaning, no prior context and such that they had developed. And it seems that prior to a Titan, which eventually became Overwatch, Blizzard had been trying for a while to come out with a new IP and just hadn't really found anything that stuck until they got to the kind of the Overwatch series. Well, series, though it's a single title, though there's all the rumors that there's going to be an Overwatch 2, which is more or less just a single player game. Or not a single player game, a story driven game, as opposed to the PvP only focus of the current Overwatch. He also talked about how like Diablo is like a shining pillar to Blizzard of their commitment to only releasing a game when it's done, as the original Diablo missed the holiday season, you know, when it originally launched in 1996, that it, you know, was, it just barely missed Christmas. They released it, you know, on New Year's Eve, And it ended up becoming the best-selling game of 1997. So they still hit massive sales numbers, despite the fact that they missed that Thanksgiving, Christmas window that most video game companies usually tend to try and target for at least their game to maximize sales during that holiday season. And, you know, some more interesting things was going through and kind of like yet another post-mortem on Diablo 3 and Reaper of Souls. He talks a little candidly about the real money auction house in Diablo 3 and acknowledges the rough start that D3 had, and that there was a lot of criticisms against the real money auction house, and that it circumvented a lot of the game itself. He specifically said that their thoughts internally were, people are going to do this anyways, why don't we provide them a safe and secure way to trade items? But the problem was that we didn't design the loot model with that in mind. We designed it without an auction house initially, and when you have an auction house in a game that's dropping tons and tons of loot, it's way cheaper and easier to get secondhand items from the auction house. And this meant that the item reward loop was completely destroyed. And that item reward loop is essentially what makes ARPGs ARPGs. It's never enough. There's always that one other item with better stats or more damage or an additional skill point. You never have a full set of perfect gear, though I'm sure at this point in time someone is fully decked out in full primal ancients with perfect stat rolls. I'm sure now, somewhere out there in D3, there is a person that has perfect stats, and they just literally have to do nothing but grind Paragon. But for the other 99.999% of us, it's still the reason why we play, to get that better gear, to get that next GR. And that was something that when the design team was actually approached by it, you know, and he asked them, you know, if you could just snap your fingers and make it happen, would you remove the auction house? And it was like kind of like a unanimous yes from the development team. And so it was difficult justifying it to management, but they eventually relented. And of course, we all know that with Reaper of Souls, they pulled the real money auction house. And in the end, you know, Morhaime said that it did prove to be the right call, you know, for the game, for the fans, for the franchise. And then, of course, you can't talk about Diablo nowadays without, of course, also talking about Immortal. And he mirrored some statements that J. Allen Brack had made back in his interview with IGN in May. Whereas he wanted to say, it's sort of like when you have a group that's really passionate about a franchise like Diablo, really excited about a project that hasn't been announced. Blizzard tried to manage expectations that they weren't going to announce Diablo 4 at BlizzCon, and I'm not sure that got through. Most of the audience did not get that memo. Maybe there should have been more discussion around Blizzard is not abandoning the PC. And that's one of those things that, you know, J. Allen Brack had talked about back in May, saying that, you know, we're still a PC company first, and that, you know, they haven't forgotten Diablo on the PC. There is going to be PC titles. Diablo Immortal is this extra thing in addition to the other stuff that we're working on. And, well, everyone is still waiting. We pretty much, I think the majority of people know and acknowledge that Blizzard is working on Diablo 4, and that we will be getting that announcement at some point. We all hope that it's this year, and that it's BlizzCon 2019, that we do get that announcement. That doesn't mean that we're going to get the game, you know, anytime soon. They could announce it in 2019, and we don't get it till 2021, 2022. And I'm perfectly happy with waiting, as long as they make the game perfect. And we, you know, learn from some of those growing pains that Diablo 3 had in the beginning. You know, will they figure out a better method of trading? You know, obviously Loot 2.0 more or less got rid of trading in its entirety, and that causes, you know, some problems. Whereas, you know, a system like Path of Exile is really complicated, convoluted, but it's done that way on purpose to try and prevent scams or bots or item trading websites and such. You know, is there a middle ground? Is there something else that we can that we can accomplish. And that's something I know, you know, Wyatt Chang mentioned a couple times at this last BlizzCon, though more in line with in regards to trading and Immortal, and that there is something in between, like an auction house and no trading at all, and that they can find a better point, because he acknowledged that no trading obviously isn't what's best for ARPGs, and that there's something else that can be done, something else that should be done, you know, in regards to that. And you know, it's one of those ones that is it's pretty nice to see that even though Mike Morhaime is of course, you know, no longer with the company, I believe that he's already has stepped down from his advisor position and is completely free. As we found out in that interview as well from Games Beat, that his non-compete clause is also done. And well, he wasn't ready to acknowledge that he's going to jump back into gaming. His main priority is with, you know, his wife and his child, you know, taking care of his family, spending time with his family. That anything that he does going forward is going to be something that he is going to take his family into consideration. It might involve gaming, might involve something else. And we'll be interested in going and checking out, you know, what he has to offer. Because, I mean, he's one of the three people that helped found this company that we obviously all fell in love with at some point. It might have frayed, or there might be some bad blood that has developed over the years. I'm still a fan, obviously. I'm making a show about Diablo. I can't not be a fan and continue doing this. But you know, even those that don't like the direction that Blizzard or Diablo has gone, we've got another chance, right? Diablo 4. It's on the horizon. It's coming. You know, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, it's so funny watching, I posted kind of like a rumor roundup article of stuff regarding Diablo 4, and every other post is like, they're not making Diablo 4, you can't prove that. And it's just, they literally have done everything in their power to say we're working on Diablo 4, just short of 100% saying we're working on Diablo 4. We've got other Diablo projects. We know which Diablo project you want us to announce, but we're not announcing that one. We're still making PC titles for the Diablo franchise. If that doesn't tell you, then I don't know. I think I did the same rant on like the last couple of episodes, so I'll cut myself off there and try to stop myself from doing that in the next one. No idea how that one's gonna pan out. But while we're kind of like on that topic of rumors and rumor milling, I want to bring up the fact that San Diego Comic-Con is just in a couple weeks. And now Blizzard hasn't made any statements as to, you know, what their presence is going to be. In the past couple of years, Blizzard has had, you know, some presence at San Diego Comic-Con. Sometimes they haven't done any panels, and it was just kind of like, hey, we've got a Blizzard shop and some exclusive Funko Pops or gear that you can go through and get there. But even going back and looking at last year, as far as Diablo goes, Blizzard themselves didn't make any announcements, but there was a Diablo announcement out of San Diego Comic-Con 2018, and that was the since-canceled Diablo comic. That was originally announced by Titan Comics. And so even if Blizzard doesn't have any type of official presence there, there's a couple of things that we still could get out of it. Namely, there might be a revival of the comic, or we might finally get an official confirmation of the Netflix series that's been kind of, under development, under wraps, under lock and key, though still being developed. We could pretty much, again, yeah, there's so much information out there that they're developing or with the Netflix series that it's kind of hard to believe that it's not going to happen at this point. Especially going back and looking for like everything else that Netflix is doing at the moment. They are losing a lot of their like big tentpole content. NBC just announced that they're pulling The Office from Netflix in 2021, you know, to go to their own streaming service. Disney is going to be going through and pulling a lot of their content, or their new content is only going to be premiering on the Disney Plus streaming service. And so Netflix is doubling down on original content. And one of the things that they've had some good luck with is the video game adaptation, namely Castlevania. And that one did really well. And they also have the Witcher series. And then there was... Dang it, I forgot to write this down in the show notes. There was an announcement that they went through and made back at E3 that they are... Is that it? No. Okay. I thought that there was another announcement, but there is just that they're going to go through and they're adapting some of their Netflix shows, such as Stranger Things, into a game. And that it seems that, you know, they're just kind of like, they're strengthening those connections that they have with video game development. And that the video game series themselves are just, you know, rife. They're rife for going through and being picked up. Because there's always been the Hollywood dream of making a successful video game adaptation into a movie, but they almost always fall flat. Netflix at least has found a pretty good tempo with capturing the feel of the Castlevania series, keeping it mature, which is something that most Hollywood studios are very afraid to do. They don't like touching rated R movies. They prefer to go for the PG-13. And when you're going through and you're trying to make an adaptation of something like Diablo, you'd be doing the entire franchise a disservice of making it PG-13, you know, or TV-14 as opposed to TV-MA, that you can't have a non-bloody, gory Diablo title. And Netflix, at least, is willing to go through and, you know, take the chance, take the risk on that. And that's going to be cool. I really hope that we do see some sort of announcement out of San Diego Comic-Con. The Comic-Con itself hasn't announced the program schedule yet, so we don't know who all the vendors and what the panels and presentations are going to be. We'll probably know more as we get closer to that. I believe it's July 18th through the 21st is when Comic-Con is going on, and we'll know a little bit more there once we get to that point. But the other one that I wanted to look at was the comic revival itself. Because if we go and we look at the time frame that was kind of thrown out for the Diablo 4 development, the original idea was for it to be announced and released, or not released, but at least announced at BlizzCon 2018. And the topic of the comic was going to be the formation of Sanctuary, going back and having a closer look at the actual birth of the Nephilim, you know, the join forces of the angels and demons as they go and they created a Sanctuary itself, and how we all just came to be, further fleshing out the history and the timeline of the series, which may or may not be kind of an indicator of some of the things that they're wanting to go through and do forward in Diablo 4. Do they want to focus more on the story of what the Nephilim are? Do they want to put more of the focus back on that conflict between angels and demons and these kind of, like, you know, the little minor renegade faction that broke off? Are they going to go back and start talking more about the World Stone, you know, which is of course center to the creation of Sanctuary? If we look at that original timeline, that comic was going to come out like right before BlizzCon when D4 was going to be announced. But that, of course, changed, you know, over the summer. So that very well could have been that timetable was scrapped and that they wanted to hold back on the comic. And so they ended up, but the only way that they could move forward with, you know, delaying that comic was to just cancel it outright. Whether they go back with Titan Comics or they pick another publisher in order to go through and do it, it remains to be seen, you know, if they'll even pick up the comic book again at all. That would be further proof that Diablo 4 is going to be announced at this year's BlizzCon if we do get some sort of third-party tie-in, whether it's a new novel, a comic. I think the Netflix series is more or less independent from, you know, having to be a Diablo 4 tie-in. And I would actually be really interested in seeing what time period that they pick for this Diablo 4 series. Are they going to do more of the scale of Wrath that focuses, eons, before any of the Diablo games take place, whereas just the battle between the angels and demons will take place during the Sin War? There's a lot that can be done, with the series. There's so much history, lore, and story that exists within the Diablo world that, the games barely even touch. The games are just a... It's always interesting going back and listening to some of the writers and story designers talk about the Diablo series, because the story is always an opt-in. It's unlike a lot of other games, it's not something that you're forced to experience. It's a secondary thing. You have to purposely go out, look for it, or engage with it to pick up the story. You can play through the entire game skipping everything. Or even now with seasonal play, you don't even have to beat the campaign to unlock adventure mode and have no story at all. So it's definitely leaves itself open for a lot of world building and development, because you just kind of have the games themselves give you a taste. They give you a setting and an idea, but not a lot of substance. And that's where, a lot of the novels, the lore books, like the Book of Adria, Book of Cain, Book of Tyriel, have come in to fill those massive gaps that exist inside of that that story piece, for the Diablo franchise. I would love to go and hear your thoughts. Is there anything that you're hoping, anything that you think disproves Diablo 4 is going to be announced at this BlizzCon? Anything that you think I may have missed as far as another piece of evidence towards Diablo 4? I know Watson, goes through it anytime any Diablo news comes up. He's super quick on that email, going through and shooting me, "Hey, have you seen this article? Have you seen this article?" I want to say, thanks and props, for going through. And because there's a couple of times there's a story that I might have missed or I might not have seen. So definitely thank you for that one. I would also love to hear your thoughts. If they were to announce like a Netflix series, what time frame would you like to see? What stories would you like for them to tell? Just drop me a line, westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. Again, that is westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. Or you can also just tweet the show at the WM Workshop on Twitter. And then normally I will record live at twitch.tv/blizzpro every other Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. But the next episode, episode 168, which would normally be recorded on July 10th, is actually going to be recorded on Thursday, July 11th. So just keep an eye out for that one. Work continues to be work, and I have unfortunately some scheduling conflicts that prevent me from recording on those Wednesdays. Hopefully as we continue on into the summer, things will slow down a little bit, and I'll be able to get back to the regular Wednesday recording sessions. But also, feel free to go through and check out all the stories and more on diablo.blizzpro.com. You can even find us in game. We are the BlizzPro clan. We've got plenty of open spaces that you can go through and join us. Also, don't forget the Westmarch Workshop community. You can also hang out. I've grouped up with some of the guys from the clan and some of the listeners to the show a couple of times over on discord.gg/blizzpro. I always make sure to try and keep an eye on it. I might not be lurking in one of the channels, but if I see somebody on, pop in real quick just to say hi. And a lot of times they're either muted, or I guess they hint AFK, or they just don't like me because they never say anything back. But just keep an eye out for it. If you want to go through, just hop in. There's plenty of people in clan that wouldn't mind going through, joining and hopping and doing, helping out with some speedruns or something along those lines. And of course, you can always go through. You can follow me personally. I'm at @9ballgamer on Twitter. In the once biannual twitch.tv/9ballstream that you may find very, very rarely. I might go through and try and stream here in the next couple of weeks. We'll see. I've got some vacation time that I'm going to be using, and so I might have a little bit of free time to stream, depending upon how everything else goes. But with that, I definitely thank you all for going through and joining me here tonight. and for listening to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, you know, your platform of preference. And with that, good night, everybody, and I'll catch you next time.